Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us. And time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
There's a drive into left center field. This could be a grand slam for Addison Russell. It is his first grand slam, and the Cubs lead it 8-1.
Pat Hughes with the call on the score as Addison Russell does hit his first career grand slam, and it was a big night for the Cubs. They beat the White Sox 10-1 last night. They get to see Chris Sale tonight in standard issue Chicago White Sox unis. Very pleased to bring in one of the outstanding, talented, and you're going to see him for many, many years, Adam Amin from ESPN. Adam, welcome to the show. It is great to have you back.
Steve, anytime I get a chance to talk to you, you know I'm going to jump at the opportunity, but I got to tell you, I'm a little offended because I called that game last night. You didn't find mine? You could have used our call on ESPN radio last night.
And again, that's Sean, the producer. It's always on him. I mean, you tell him which one Sean, you picked.
I'm blaming the spinner. I'm blaming Sean right now. Trust me, he's on the list. Whatever list that is, it's a non-existent list. It's not a real list. Nothing happens on the list. But you keep it in your head.
I know you do.
But as always, man, I'm ecstatic to be back out with you. It's always a pleasure.
You know, you cut your teeth early in this thing, actually in baseball. What is it about the nuts and bolts of play-by-play anything that you enjoy?
Especially on the radio side, I think there is a fundamental ground that you have to start off with. And this is just me personally. This is how it's worked for me, and I know it's worked for a lot of other people. But for me personally, just to have the fundamentals of prioritizing information. What does a fan who's sitting in their car or, you know, sitting on their porch or whatever they may be doing, listening to a game, what do they need to know? What's the most important thing in that very moment that they need to know so that they can at least have some semblance of an idea of what is happening in the game that they're listening to? And if you can't give them that in the proper order, in the proper priority, then you have to figure out how to do that. And if you can't do that, then you're in the wrong business. I've always felt that that's the most important thing by far. What do you need to give to a listener to have them understand the context and the gravity of what's happening in a situation that they're listening to? So if you can give them that, you've done the job, I feel like, and being able to transition that over onto the TV side, it's the same thing. You have to prioritize and contextualize what's important to a fan watching at home, and then you want them to enjoy the ride with you as well. I mean, there's emotional roller coasters throughout an entirety of a game, whether it's baseball or football or basketball or any other sport that you hear on the radio or watch on TV. You want to be able to contextualize those and make sure that a fan walks away having the highest level of appreciation for what just happened in front of them that they're watching or listening to. And I think if you can do those things, you walk away with a pretty good level of satisfaction when you take off the headset and walk out of the booth.
You did. You mentioned the Cubs, White Sox, and being a part of that last night. What's the feeling like in Chicago that the Cubs are doing as well as they are? The White Sox are still in the mix. The Sale thing's been a distraction. But what's your impression of both those clubs at this stage?
Yeah, I think the White Sox are kind of still looking for their identity right now. You know, they had won four in a row up until last night. They've got Sale going tonight. They've been playing decent baseball. Their offense has looked a little bit better up until last night. But, you know, it's still a little bit of divisiveness between, you know, the executive vice president Kenny Williams and the general manager Rick Hahn. And I'm not saying that those two are at wits with each other, but they've just said different things over the course of the last couple of weeks. Are we buyers or are we sellers? And if you ask one guy, he might have one opinion. If you ask another, he might have a differing viewpoint of it. And right now there's a duality going on that doesn't really comfort any White Sox fans in Chicago as to whether they want to make a push this year or not. If you're going to be a seller, great. Go ahead and get rid of the pieces that you're going to get rid of and get whatever you can back from them. If you're going to be a buyer, well, you better go out and make a move and do something that you think is going to help you get into one of those wild card spots. But you can't sit idle. And I think that's the biggest concern for White Sox fans. On the other side, 10 miles up north at Wrigley Field, they're ecstatic. You know, Cubs fans around this city, I don't think they've had a buzz like this since, I would probably say, 2003. 2007 and 08, they got swept in the playoffs. There wasn't really this excitement level that there is right now. The team is young. There's a lot of great young pieces. They're a high-powered offense. They've got the best pitching staff in terms of rotation in the National League right now. So there's a high level of excitement. Aroldis Chapman made his debut last night. So the buzz is significant. I mean, significant when you go to the north side and talk to anybody about the Cubs right now.
It's interesting in this profession, there's certain sports where the fan base is extremely particular. Soccer fans are very particular about who announces. Golf fans are very particular about who announces. College wrestling fans are very particular about who announces. You did the NCAA Wrestling Championship, and Penn State, of course, won it at Madison Square Garden, and you received rave reviews for it. What did it take to prepare for something like that, Adam, with so many different variables and wrestlers to deal with over days as opposed to a standard, quote, game?
I think the process of it has to start from a year prior. I think you have to see who has filled in these lineup slots from last year, who's gone, and who's stepping into these lineups a year later. We do have the luxury of kind of tracking the championship itself, so we do have to adjust on the fly, but we do have that luxury of focusing in on certain stories that stick out after the first basically two sessions. You know, the first session that we come on the air on Thursday, it is very much a primer for what has gone on. Let me tell you about this coach. Let me tell you about this team, because a lot of wrestling fans are regionalized. They may not know a ton about the Pac-12 team, and the folks out west may not know a ton about a favorite like a Penn State or a Rutgers this past season that made a really big splash by sending their entire lineup to Nationals. So You're kind of giving everybody a primer about what to expect. Here are some of the guys that you really need to take a look at. Here's what happened last year so that we can get you prepared for the context of this season. But the prep for it really does have to start a year prior. You have to look back to what happened a year ago so that you can build off of that story of the season for that particular program and that particular school. So the process, it can be a little bit tedious because you're gunning through, you know, 330 different guys. Any one of them can be a story. You're not prepping every single name and every single story and every single background, but you do need to know just about a little bit about each section that you're looking at, whether it's, you know, let me tell you the five guys you might need to think about in 125 and the three guys in 133, et cetera. So that prep process can be difficult, especially for somebody who wasn't exposed to wrestling on a high level, high quality level like I have been the last half decade. Prior to that, I just covered some high school wrestling and I knew the mechanics of it, but I wasn't so far in deep into it like I feel like I might be right now. So the process of it was difficult. I did take some lumps, and rightfully so. And I feel like I finally have a grasp on it in a much better fashion now than I did, you know, five seasons ago when I first started calling the championships.
Well, believe me, you do. And that's just from pro to pro, I can tell. The next part is one of the not-so-dirty secrets in today's broadcasting, because they're trying to keep costs under control. They've paid so much for rights. Every once in a while, you have to call a basketball game from the studio. I think you do it in Charlotte. What are the challenges? Because you're great at feeding off crowds and emotion in crowds. What are the challenges of trying to do that the couple of times you've had to from the studio as opposed to being on site?
That's probably the second toughest thing. The thing that you just mentioned is trying to feed off the energy. You know, I live for crowd noise. I live for the big moment. I live to see a home fan base be, you know, just kind of nuts when the moment calls for it. Last night's a perfect example. I mean, Addison Russell hits the grand slam. That's one of the loudest moments I've heard at Wrigley all season long. You live for that stuff, and it feeds your call. Your call is tailored oftentimes to what the crowd and the atmosphere is like. The toughest thing I would say is you lack an omniscient point of view. And when I say that, I mean if I'm sitting courtside, if I look across the way, I can see Steve Jones. I can see the Penn State broadcast crew, and maybe they look at the coach, and now I look at the coach, and now I see Patrick Chambers reacting to something. So I can react to Patrick. I can tell my production crew, hey, let me get a shot of Patrick Chambers after this, because I think he's talking to one of his players. He might be talking to an assistant. He might be yelling at a referee, whatever the case may be. I can see that from my vantage point. I can look at a fan or something funny that's happening in the crowd. I can look at a player and maybe he's limping, or maybe there's something that he needs to address in that moment on the bench. I can tell my crew about those things and I can react to them. When you're sitting in a studio, you have a big monitor in front of you with four quarters of the four camera guys that are sitting, you know, whether it's under the basket or up top, you have their points of view. And certainly they cover a lot of ground, but you can't always see everything that's going on. So it's hard to react fully to everything that's happening around you. It's certainly easier to do in basketball, I would imagine, than other sports, because it's a compact area of play. It's only 10 guys that you're really worrying about on the court. But there are significant challenges to it, and it's never an ideal situation. I've learned to deal with it. Most of us have. It's probably not going away anytime soon because of the cost-saving measures that it encapsulates. But, you know, for most of us who kind of live for sitting courtside and feeding off the energy of the crowd, it's certainly not an ideal situation, but we make the best out of it.
For me, something that's relatively easy is the fact that I work with Jack Ham all the time on football. I work all the time with Dick Girardi on basketball. What does it take for you to adjust to a different broadcast partner? Because you have to work with a number of them during the course of the year. And is there any methodology that you have to make that adjustment quick and easy and with some chemistry?
Awareness. I think awareness is the most important thing. When you're aware of your surroundings, when you're aware of the people around you, when you try to be aware of their personalities and their strengths and their weaknesses, I think it makes things a lot easier. You know, when you step into a booth with somebody or you're sitting courtside with somebody new, all you want to do is make them feel comfortable and figure out what they're comfortable talking about. If they're comfortable talking X's and O's, let's get them into a situation where they can talk intelligently about X's and O's. If they can talk a lot about landscape, well, let's make sure we prep a lot of issues that we can talk about maybe after a promo, or if we see there's a guard that has a similar look or a similar makeup as another player that this analyst has seen or talked about, let's try to put them in a situation to talk intelligently about those things. And when you have new people to work with, sitting down and talking to them before you guys go on air is always a help. I mean, just to be able to vibe with somebody and try to figure out what their personality is. You have to be a little bit analytical with that, but you need as much information as possible to form how you're going to put them into a sweet spot. So when you can do that, when you can be aware of those things, it certainly helps. Not going to work every single time. Not everybody wants to. Everybody doesn't always get along. Not everybody has great chemistry, but you can try to enhance it as much as possible if you're aware of other people's personalities and their strengths and their weaknesses. That's something
Big parts of it is, to me, working with people with no ego. I mean, in other words, I have that. The two guys I work with are like zero ego. I mean, to me, that's one of the most important parts, because obviously you're going to come from it from being a team player point of view. I think a big starting point, if there's no ego out there, you can make it click like that.
I've been really, really lucky, Steve, honestly. Yeah. The last few years working on football, the guys I've worked with on college football games are just guys who care about doing the job. They want to do the job well. They want to enjoy the people that they work with. And they have little to no ego. Their ego, if any, comes from a place of confidence, and it comes from a place of wanting to do well. It comes from a place of maybe being a perfectionist. And that's, like I said, I've been very lucky. The types of people I've worked with, especially on the college football side, are those types of guys. John Congemi, Kelly Stauffer. I'll work with Mac Brown this season, who might be one of the most ego-free human beings I've ever talked to on this planet. He is as sweet of a human being as you'll meet. And the common thread amongst all of those guys and several others that I've been lucky enough to work with, the common thread is they want to do a good job. They want to showcase everything that they can about the game that's going on in front of us. And when you have people like that, when you have people who are willing to give you the room necessary because you know they know you're going to give them that same thing back to them, those are the best relationships on air to really enhance a broadcast. And you see that. There are plenty of broadcasts out there when you guys watch on College Football Saturdays. Whether you don't like a guy stylistically or he gets on your nerves or he played at Pittsburgh or something so you don't like him very much, totally understandable. But there are guys out there, you know, guys and women out there, when you watch any type of sports broadcast, you'll sense that level of chemistry right away. And it's up and down. You can tell that it comes from a place of being a team player, like you said, Steve.
What, with you and Mac Brown, what will be your primary focal point of games this year?
I think trying to just enhance what's going on with the situational stuff that we see. Something that I love about Mac Brown is that he's so multidimensional. He's a great X's and O's coach. He's a great motivator. He's a great leader. And he's really dialed in. So there's a lot of different places I feel like I can go with Mac. And the luxury of having that is there is no set format of what we have to do. If we feel like we need to dive in X's and O's, I know I can lean on him for that. If I feel like there's a game on Saturday that we can really plug or really push and he's got some info on it, I can go there with him on that. If I feel like, you know, in a blowout situation or something along those lines, we got to put ourselves into the minds of the coach that's coaching the losing team. Let's go to Mac for that, because I know he's been in situations like that where he's had to motivate his guys. So I feel like the luxury of being with Mac is that there doesn't have to be a set format. I can go in a lot of different directions. Our producer can take us in a lot of different directions, and I know we're going to be taken care of because of how dialed in Mac is to all of those facets of football.
There are a couple games early, Adam, that you have that you, there's a particular excitement for you to be on site for that?
Absolutely. We have a phenomenal Friday night schedule. I'm not just saying that just to be a company shill. I've looked at schedules in the past. I've been going through some thoughts about the past games that have been on Friday nights. There are some really good ones, but the matchups that we've been handed this year on Friday is the best schedule ever that we've had on a Friday night package. So we open up with Colorado, Colorado State, and Denver. It's a Rocky Mountain showdown. It's been played for a long, long time. We get Louisville and Syracuse. We get Baylor on the road on a Friday night at Rice. We get TCU on the road on a Friday night at SMU. Maybe our biggest game is September the 30th when Stanford goes to Washington in what could be a huge game to help determine the Pac-12 North. And then we get Clemson, the national runner-up, on the road at Boston College on a Friday night in Chestnut Hill. And that's basically just the first half of the season. I mean, the games that we're going to be lucky enough to see on Friday nights are going to be insane. So we're really excited about it. We have a great crew. We have Molly McGrath coming back from Fox to rejoin ESPN. She'll be on the sidelines for us. We've got a great schedule. So it's hard for me not to be excited about something that's, I think, only, 5 weeks away at this point.
Well, you're one of the best, and we appreciate the time you gave us very much, and we always look forward to having you on. Thanks a lot for carving out time in your valuable schedule.
Anytime, Steve, anytime.
Adam Amin, he is, you want to talk about one of the outstanding young announcers out there, he is one of them. No doubt about that. We will come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
It's hot,
but nothing is as hot as the Red Hot
Clear the Lot
sales event at Sunbury Motors Ford. Now, through the end of July, they have deals as hot as the Central PA sun. Choose from over 240 new Fords that are clearly marked with sale prices that have melted to the lowest levels of the summer. There's nothing hotter than the Ford F-150. SMC has over 125 new Ford trucks covering four city blocks with discounts up to $11,000 and starting at $22,749. Save up to $4,500 on new Ford Fusions that are priced as low as $18,915. And pick from Central PA's largest selection of new Ford Escapes. They start as low as $19,945. But you better hurry before the hot July sun sets on the Red Hawk.
Clear the lot.
Sales event at Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Great to have you with us here on the show today. Our thanks to Adam Amin for joining us on the show. And I think you can tell there's a passion for what he does. and I don't. I honestly think that you can't do this unless you have that. In fact, I don't think you can do anything well in life unless you have that passion. And, you know, it's, you have the ability to want to attack what you're doing. For example, I know I was interviewed by Mike Poirman about, I don't know, maybe a month, 6 weeks ago. And he asked me about getting ready for the season. And I said, well, I had 41 teams to prepare for. I've got all 41 done now. Well, the reason I did it is I didn't have to force myself to do it. I wanted to do it. Now, obviously, I have a job where you want to do those things. But the last thing you want to do is, on anything, is mail it in, because people can tell right away when you're mailing it in. And I don't just mean broadcasting. I mean anything in life. That's why so many people go into business for themselves, I truly believe. Because when you go into business for yourself, you're doing it with a passion and a drive, something you love. And, of course, when it's your name on it, there's a lot more at stake. Final half hour coming up.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Is Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our sports bozo of the day. It's a beauty. Former Washington Wizards guard Glenn Rice Jr. No, not the Glenn Rice that set the NCAA tournament scoring record with Michigan. This is Glenn Rice Jr., who was arrested in Georgia Monday after allegedly assaulting a former Tulane University basketball player and running away with two bags in which police found guns. According to the police report obtained by TMZ, of course it was obtained by TMZ, a witness told police that Rice, a former Georgia Tech standout, and yes, the son of the all-star and 15-year NBA veteran Glenn Rice, pulled into a supermarket parking lot along with former Tulane guard Jordan Callahan in a white Porsche, then got out of the car to have a conversation. That chat allegedly ended with Rice punching Callahan in the face, breaking his jaw, and knocking out one of his teeth before grabbing two bags from the Porsche and taking off running down the street. When the police arrived, they found Callahan in a pool of blood, and the witness pointed to where Rice fled. So the police tracked down Rice and arrested him, and they found two bags nearby, hidden under leaves. Inside the bags, two guns, one an AK-47 and a Taurus 38 Special, and a bunch of bullets. I think they went with the guns. They also say a third gun was found in the Porsche. Oh, there's more. Rice also had roughly $2,700 in cash and six cell phones on him at the time. Rice was arrested and booked on charges of felony robbery, aggravated battery, and possession of less than an ounce of marijuana, and later released from custody. Last October, Rice was shot in the left leg during an argument at an Atlanta restaurant. And in the resulting investigation, police found a black book bag, opened it, and found 240.4 grams of marijuana and a U.S. passport that belongs to, quote, Mr. Rice. That bag and $5,953 in cash that was in Mr. Rice's possession when he was shot were entered into evidence, and Rice was charged with reckless conduct and possession of marijuana. He had just completed a pretrial intervention program stemming from that incident prior to the latest arrest, according to TMZ. Now, he has not played in the league since November 2014 with the Wizards, waived in January 2015. He just finished this season in the D-League with the Rio Grande Valley Vipers. He had not played in the D-League or the NBA this past season. He did, however, appear in the episode of The Real Housewives of Atlanta. Yeah, it leads to a lot of things. He was actually dismissed, by the way, from the Georgia Tech basketball program following a bizarre incident outside an Atlanta nightclub. Rice was only charged with permitting unlawful operation of a vehicle, but a student manager in the same car was charged with driving under the influence, and another passenger was charged with discharging a firearm under the influence, apparently by accident. Rice had several disciplinary issues prior to his dismissal and spoke of that incident, quote, as a wake-up call. Evidently, we're still not awake. We're still in a slumber. And that, in great detail, is our sports bozo of the day. How about that?
I thought you were going to go with Charles Barkley, but boy, that tops Barkley.
Nope, sorry. Guns and Drugs usually wins. Those are some of the biggies. We're going to get to Rich Scarcella probably tomorrow. We'll do it then.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, we'll do it then.
Yeah, for those who didn't hear what happened to Charles Barkley, he was looking for lobsters off the Florida Keys and got bit okay. Bit by a shark, and the people that were running the boating service posted it on Instagram that he got bit.
Holy moly.
Actually, it was not Charles Barkley. It was Warren Sapp. Beg your pardon. It was not Barkley. It was Warren
right.
Sapp.
Warren Sapp.
It was Warren Sapp. Sorry about that.
He has other issues.
Yeah, I'm thinking, didn't know he had still had that much coin left to go fishing for lobster.
Wow.
Yeah, not Barkley. He was busy practicing his golf swing somewhere.
Barkley, by the way, did finish last.
Oh, out of Tahoe?
Yes.
Oh, man.
He finished 161st out of 161.
Oh, man.
He did finish last. Hey, that happens. You know, the heck.
He's just there for the good time.
Look, I don't care what anybody says. You want to perform well in those things. You have people watching you. I mean, the end of next month, I've got a matchup. Jack Ham, Mike Wagner, Ron Moeller, and myself. Now, do you think I want to sit there and I want to be lousy with these guys?
No way. Got to keep up with them.
Exactly. I mean, not my home course, it's their home course, but still. I think we're going to do this like match play. I think it's going to be Mike Wagner and me and Jack and Moeller. Jack, by the way, Moeller worked on Jack's swing. Jack just went to Sonoma. So, he's playing in a tournament out there. Yeah. It's not a bad life.
No, you got that right.
Not a bad life.
Hey, you got a head start on some multiple rounds, late spring, early summer on your part.
Believe me, I needed them. Okay, because I don't know.
You're tearing them up. You made it under 80.
I've done it twice. Yes,
yeah, it's a big moment.
Sure, it is.
Sure.
And like I said, we'll find out later in the month what that actually means, or later next month what that means. But we're combining the Duquesne Club trip with this. So, yeah. Jack and I always do the Duquesne Club thing every year together. And Mole Man's always there. Now, you know what the key with Mole Man is. Jack keeps asking me, he said, when the parking pass is coming out? When the parking pass is coming out? Okay, I got it. That they all get, like, we haven't even, I said, Jack, we haven't even had media day yet. He said, oh, okay. So, that's my life in a nutshell right there. Yeah. When's the parking pass coming out? When are you going to get the parking? Like okay, we'll get it. Don't worry about it.
Once you don't have to worry about parking in lot 24 anymore, you don't want to go back.
I understand where the mole man's coming from here. I mean, the mole man has got, like, the party of all parties. I mean, you've got to be able to. That's why you've got to, when you get to a game, you've got to make sure you are there. Mole man will treat you as if you're a royalty. As soon as he finds out you're doing the show, you're in. I mean, you are in. Big time in. Yeah, you should be in good shape. Yeah, you'll feel, in fact, you might not want to come back. So, I'm going up to Williamsport tonight. Let me check the radar here. See how far I get to go. Do I go to Lock Haven? Let's see. Did I ever tell you the story? First year I'm doing the Spikes games, 2006. I'm up at Williamsport to do a game, and this. Yeah, the game starts, and I'm looking out there, and this big, dark cloud comes up, okay, right over Route 15. And I'm looking over, thinking, oh, this looks kind of ominous. And then the wind kicks up, and I mean, it looks like it's going to be nasty. So they quickly stop the game, and they have, at that time, I don't know if it's changed, but at least at that time, they had a dual tarp system. Here at State College, they just have a tarp, they roll it out, they put it on. But they had two tarps. So they put this down, but they don't have enough time to really anchor things down. And suddenly, huge gust of wind comes up, and it hits that one tarp on the right side of the infield just right, and it picks that thing up and it throws it over the right field wall, and it's pouring. So I finally said, well, I guess we're done for the night. And the guy, Kenny, the official scorer, great guy, says, no, we can't call the game until 45 minutes after. It's league regulation. Can't call the game until 45 minutes after you stop it. I said, Kenny, your tarp is in Loyal Sock. It's over. That was the first year. Now, the radar shows that it is raining here, but not there.
Looks like Interstate 80 is the border. Most of the rain is south of 80 at this point.
Yeah.
It's trying to get north of there.
Doesn't really look like it's raining where you are.
No.
Yeah, you're good. Yeah, supposedly it's raining here. I don't know. I haven't looked outside. I've got an air conditioner here. I can't see how. The Sunbury Motors studio is... well, I have a walk-in basement, just so people. I've got a full door out there, the whole deal. So even though I'm quote downstairs, but I don't have, I can't really tell if it's raining or not at the moment here. I think it is. So, well, let's see what it says here. It's always great to see Gabe Sinacropi, who does a great job up there. Williamsport as a franchise does a great job up there. They're playing great baseball, too. They've won 9 of their last 10 games. Very impressed by what they've done. it's ironic. These are the two best teams in the league record-wise. State College is number one, and they have a one-game lead over Williamsport. State College is the second hottest team in the league. They've won 7-10. And Williamsport gained two games on them. All right, let's see. What does yonder thing here? Well, it says thunderstorms here, 5, 6, and 7. Nothing at 8 or 9. It's not really that heavy, though. I didn't think the heavy stuff's coming down for a while. This isn't bad. We'll play. All right. We'll play. Maybe a long night, but we'll play. That's me challenging Gabe. Telling you, Gabe, we're going to play. We're going to play. Come on. It's me challenging him. Come on there, Gabe. Don't give up. I don't want to come back up next month to play doubleheader up there. That sounds selfish, doesn't it?
Doubleheader now rescheduled for the final Monday in August. That's the last thing you want to hear.
No, that's not happening. College football playoff, again, the big change that was made today. It only affects 4 years, 18, 19, 24, and 25. And we mentioned the 24 and 25 thing because I know people like to plan ahead. This year is no big deal. Fiesta Peach Bowl will be Saturday the 31st. Rose Bowl for 17 for that season will be on the 1st, Rose and Sugar. Then the first change is going to be the Cotton and Orange in the 2018 season. Instead of being played on Monday the 31st, will be played on Saturday the 29th of December. In 2019, instead of Tuesday the 31st, will be played on Saturday the 28th of December, Fiesta and Peach Bowls. 2020 is January 1st. 21 is New Year's Eve because it's a Friday. And that's a national holiday anyway because New Year's Day is on a Saturday. 22nd will be Saturday the 31st. 23rd, Monday the 1st, it's the Rose and Sugar again. Then the 24th in 2024, it's going to be Saturday, December 28th. And then Saturday, December 27th. In 2025, only 2 days after Christmas. See, to me, this is all setting up, Sean, to have those quarterfinal games the previous Saturday. I think that, you know, I see the setup happening here if they expand to eight teams. I can see it. We will come back with more in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The Lincoln Motor Company invites you to discover how exhilarating 400 horsepower can give you serenity. To experience how an available 360-degree camera can change your perspective. And to see how Auto Hold can relax you a little more behind the wheel in stop-and-go traffic. Because we just don't think about what a car can do, but rather what it can do for you. We call it the more human side of engineering. Discover what a Lincoln can do for you. The Lincoln Summer Invitation Sales Event is on, where you'll find exceptional offers on the Lincoln family of luxury vehicles. The Lincoln MKX, the Lincoln Small Utility MKC, the iconic Navigator, and the 2017 Lincoln MKZ. The Lincoln Summer Invitation. Make a summer memory today. Visit Sunbury Motors Lincoln in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, or visit them at sunburylincoln.com.
And Braves tonight here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. 6:35 the airtime tonight. 7:10 will be the first pitch. Great to have the Phillies on once again here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Since in talking to everybody, they've loved it. That's been a big plus. And the Steelers are going to be on the Valley, 100.9 the Valley this year.
Yep, they are checking in at training camp as we speak. And preseason starts 2 weeks from tomorrow night for the Steelers. Eagles, they start 2 weeks from tonight over on Eagle 107, Eagles Tampa Bay. And then next night, Steelers in Detroit.
Yep. There you go.
Getting closer.
Oh, I think this is, Tom Verducci is writing, a really interesting stuff on SI about the future of baseball. And I really have to take more time to really read it. He writes here, the modern methodology of keeping the ball out of play, more pitchers throwing harder and being used more often in shorter bursts works. In fact, it works too well. Teams used 557 pitchers in 1998. Last year, they used a record 735, a 32% increase. We're not even through July, and teams have already used more pitchers this year than they did in the entire 2010 season, 635. We're headed for a record number of pitchers for the fourth straight year. The ability for players to get ready to play games is taking longer. And for the first time ever, it used to be forever, that actually day baseball had a higher run production than night baseball. Now, for the first time ever, night baseball has a higher production, has a higher number of runs than day baseball. Players are really struggling to come back for a day game. Now, here's one that, and by the way, they want to play fewer games. Major League Baseball says you're going to have to take less money. And that's the issue right there. Despite all the advances in strength training, nutrition, and medicine, Tom writes, from 1998, the first year with 30 teams, to 2015, the number of players who took 600 plate appearances in the season declined 21% from 102 to 81, and the number of pitchers who made 32 starts declined 38% from 58 to 36. At the same time, the average player salary has jumped 204% from $1.4 million to $4.25 million. I'm telling you, this is loaded with interesting stuff. Loaded with it.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.